Haven't I seen your picture on a bottle of iodine?
What?
I mean, was that the little woman?
No, that's my little sister. A harmless old witch, but she runs clean off her course every once in a while.
I say, do you live here?
I'm the owner of this ship, and I'll sit the gizzard of any lover what questions it.
Who questioned it? Did you?
But don't look at me.
Just so you know who's in command.
All right. Look, pal, did you know Captain Weatherby?
I was his first mate when he struck him down. That's when I took command.
What about your kid sister? What's buzzing with her?
Oh, Meg here, she and Eli Weatherby was to be married. And when they butchered Eli, something cracked in her crow's nest. She can't get her compass bearings ever since.
She should take something.
We tried everything. She just lost her ballast.
Too bad. Mentally unballast.
Yeah.
I suppose you were on the ship when the captain was murdered.
I ain't seen her was, and I ain't seen her warrant.
Well, that settles that. Oh. You know anything about this?
Where'd you get it?
It came by Tsitsi Flat.
I'll bet Meg sent it.
Meg?
She's always sending letters.
Playing post office, eh?
Yeah, loves to.
What's that?
They're singing again.
Who?
Slaves.
Slaves?
Yeah, hundreds of them. You can kill them, but you can't kill their spirits.
Take it easy, chum. I don't go for ghosts.
They don't bother me none either since I got used to them.
Okay. Are we rolling? Good. Forgotten Horrors Podcast. Take one. Do the appropriate music. No, no, no. I said the appropriate music. That's more like it. This is Mike Price welcoming you to the Forgotten Horrors Podcast. A blatant exploitation of our new series of Forgotten Horrors movie books. It is my pleasure now to introduce John Woolley, without whom none of this would be possible. And now, the acclaimed author of Soul Soup for the Chickens and others too humorous to mention, John Woolley.
And, as always, if you listen to the Forgotten Horrors podcast at all, you'll know the mellifluous tones, I say, of Michael H. Price. Michael, how you doing?
Mighty fine. Mighty glad to be here.
Mighty glad to be here, too. And tonight, we're going to, or today, or whenever you happen to be listening to it, we're going to be talking about a 20th Century Fox B-picture starring the man who I guess would be really the first huge television star. I can't think of another one. I keep thinking of Dagmar, but not only was she not huge, she was not a guy. And she wasn't as big as Milton Berle anyway.
He was the only one with the guff or gumption to call himself Mr. Television.
That's right. That's right. He did. But before he was Mr. Television, going back to the silent days when he was a kid, he made films. Mm-hmm. But apparently he must have been a Fox contract player in the late 30s and early 40s, because he made several pictures, not a lot as a leading man.
Whispering Ghost was 42 and for Fox, and his next film after that was a film called Over My Dead Body.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the picture?
Not in years. Not in many years.
Mystery. He plays a mystery writer. And I guess they were, as they did in those days, they were kind of trying to bring him along. To see if he was going to be a picture, I guess, star, leading man. And that never really happened, but he made some pretty good B pictures. This one's an interesting picture, and one of the reasons it's interesting is because of a couple of players that really did a lot of B work, were very versatile within the strictures that they had. One of them was Brenda Joyce, and the other was Willie Best.
And Willie Best.
Oh, yeah. And not to mention, of course, John Carradine. it's a very interesting film. I'm interested to know what you think about it. And I've got a few notes that I took while Joey and I were watching it a week or two ago. So what's your take on it, Michael? Where would you like to start?
It amazes me that Burl did not catch on in that realm in the way that Bob Hope had caught on.
Well, wasn't this a little bit of a kind of a B-picture version of of ghost catchers or
ghost breakers.
Ghost breakers,
and of course, Hope also did the Cat and the Canary.
Cat and the Canary, right?
At about very close together,
mm-hmm.
and of course, it was Bob Hope who established the teaming with Willie Best.
I never made that connection. You're right. Yeah, sure.
It was I did a couple of long career interviews with Bob Hope during the 1970s. I think the last, early 80s as well. And we could never have a conversation without his reserving the right to champion Willie Best as, quote, the best actor I ever worked with.
Is that right?
And then he'd add, and I'm not just making a pun on his name.
Mm-hmm.
Willie was one of a kind. It's a shame he had a little more to work with than those stereotypical roles. But like Mantan Moreland, his contemporary, Willie always managed to make more of the part than was written.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that although he might have been acting scared per stereotype, he was transcending that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd if we needed a Mr. Television, I'd just assume it had been Willie Best or Mantan Moreland.
Absolutely, that's true. You know, that's the thing. You know, Milton Berle is not terribly likable in this picture.
He's never an endearing figure.
No.
I have never run across Milton Berle in anything that would make me want to champion his cause.
Or sit down and have a beer with him, as it were, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even the two Disney phonograph records that he did, one with Donald Duck and one with Mickey Mouse, you can tell he's just really not a very nice guy.
I did not know Milton Berle, and I don't know, you know, what he was like off screen, whether he was the stereotype of the, you know, clown isn't funny in the moonlight or what. But in this particular picture, it's a really not disjointed picture, but it's there's like enough material in there for about three movies.
It's a formula that he wasn't prepared to sustain.
Yeah.
Milton Berle, you look at him in just about anything he ever did, and it's like, especially in an ensemble, he seems to be the only guy in the picture who's wondering how he'll look when the film is finally projected on a screen.
Right.
There's a self-consciousness, in other words.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can put that in a context of great actors, you know, John Carradine, for goodness mm-hmm. sake, Willie Best, of course, Brenda Joyce, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of like Red Skelton and his spooky mystery comedies.
Right.
It's like they're trying to follow a formula that had worked for Bob Hope. And, of course, Bob Hope got it from a lesser-known comedian named Ed Lowery.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know about Ed Lowery. Tell us about Ed Lowery.
He had starred in a middling good old dark house-type comedy mystery called The House of Mystery.
Okay.
And that was in, 1934, I believe?
And what studio? Was that a small studio?
That was one of the Poverty Row studios.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I seem to remember that, yeah. Okay.
We devoted a chapter to it in the very first Forgotten Horrors book. And George Turner, the co-author on the original books, was just like, wow, here's the origin of Bob Hope's movie career. It's like, here's the formula. You got the wisecracking, laughing to keep from screaming type.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And Bob Hope took it and ran with it, although he didn't make that many horror comedies. He did make a lot of really creepy mystery comedies that work on both levels.
That's right. That's right. And he was also a pretty likable guy. I mean, it was that whole deal, and I suppose it goes back to House of Mystery and probably even goes back to stage plays like Seven Keys to Baalbek and things like that,
mm-hmm.
right? Would have that
yeah.
same sort of vibe. But it does. You're right. It does go back to those. And it's that thing where the protagonist is wisecracking, like you say, sort of laughing mm-hmm. to keep from screaming kind of situation. But Bob Hope, and also, you know, Bob Hope kind of put forth the sort of belligerent coward kind of thing.
Right. Brash, overbearing.
Right.
You know, he'd break in on an intimate conversation that some other people were having, and he'd say something like, "Am I protruding?"
Right.
You know?
Right,
I mean, it, malaprops, mm-hmm. arrogance, mm-hmm. and yet you liked him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's proof positive that no one can define star quality.
And Burl, they were really trying to make him not exactly an action hero, I wouldn't say, but he does have an odd speeded up fist fight in this one, the undercranked fist fight.
Yeah, it looked like they were using a hand cranked camera and running it real slow.
It certainly did. And you know, Willie Best, and he's always sort of playing off of Willie Best, and they're doing, you know, he's doing racial jokes or racist jokes, I guess they'd be considered now. But, you know, he's every bit as frightened as Willie Best is in this picture.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tell that Willie Best is faking it, and yet there's an underlying intelligence that the star player, Milton Berle, does not project.
That's very interesting.
It's funny. Yeah. You know, I mean, Berle excelled at the Yiddish brand of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about laughing to keep from crying.
Mm, sure.
And he wrote some very funny lyrics. He co-wrote the theme song for the original Little Abner movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Among, you know, many, many, many
right.
other accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to admire the longevity. I mean, mm-hmm. He kept going into, nearly the turn of the century, was it not?
It was just about, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, 2002 was mm-hmm. his last gasp, and he was still touring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He did. He kept it up, and he, you know, for whatever it's worth. Of course, you want to talk about Troopers, talk about John Carradine that's in this picture.
Oh, my goodness. Boy.
Now, this is only 2 years away from Grapes of Wrath, mm-hmm. and of course, you can make a lot out of that, but Carradine, like Lugosi, was essentially a theater actor. And in theater, one time you're the leading man, and the next time you're a spear carrier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lugosi came out of that from his native Hungary. Carradine came out of that, and Carradine mm-hmm. would just as soon, or would not, Of course, he differentiated. He was a very smart man, but he would just as soon do Voodoo Man as he would Grapes of Wrath. It's a payday, you know.
And he put those chump change paydays into his Shakespeare project.
Shakespeare Company. That's right. That's
weird.
Why he figured he was doing all that stuff for a higher purpose, which was to bring Shakespeare to the masses, as you know.
Right.
I think it's really interesting. One of the uncredited players in this, and there's a lot of them, and there's also a lot of unnecessarily complex, like, sort of secondary stories, like the one with Grady Sutton. I'm still not sure why that was even there. I think it was only probably part and parcel of these films, these sorts of films, had to have eccentric characters. And so mm-hmm. maybe those people came along as eccentric characters. But one of the guys that is not credited is Frank Phelan, who plays Curly, the announcer, who hires the John Carradine character to scare Milton Berle's character, and Frank Phelan and keep in mind Frank Phelan and Carradine had just appeared not all that long ago in Grapes of Wrath, one of the greatest American movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are again.
You're a working actor. An actor acts, wasn't it? Clu Gulager said that.
Clu Gulager told me that his own self, as you would say.
Yep.
Yes, he did.
Yep.
From Clu's lips to my ear, he said, "Actors act and writers write," and that's what we do. Well, this film was made. It's a B picture, and it's, you know, I don't think we really need to get too much into the plot, except to say that it has something to do with an old ship that's been beached,
mm-hmm. and an unsolved murder involving the ship of an ancestor or great uncle, I believe.
Of Brenda Joyce's
leading lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Burl barges in on it with no investigator credentials.
No, although he's a radio investigator.
He's a radio investigator.
He does it on the radio, and people, you know, because people saw him or heard him on the radio, he's got some sort of gravitas apparently about that, and goes in to solve this unsolved mystery.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get the girl, as it turns out, but she is Brenda Joyce. Every time I see her in something different, I'm just kind of amazed by her versatility. You're talking about playing in the Tarzan pictures. But she never became an A-star at all. But my gosh, that one worked, didn't she? She worked. She could do anything.
Well, the B pictures are always more interesting than the top-of-the-line stuff.
Always more interesting, that's right.
They showcased players who probably should have been holding forth in the top-of-the-line pictures, mm-hmm. but for whatever reasons seemed either in a groove or in a rut, depending on how your ambition runs. But, it's a...
I wonder, was she? Do you suppose she was? Under contract to Fox too, or was she just? Would she have been under contracts to Fox at that time?
To my knowledge, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, she. If she was one of them, they were looking at to see if they could move her on up. I know she got stuck, like a lot of people at the B picture level. Mm-hmm. But there's really no reason why. She's very good in this. She and Willie Best, as I say, I think are the, and Carradine's awfully good. But you know, he's hopping around acting like a frog. Is God bless him. You know, you feel for him a little bit, but
he always had to inflate himself.
He did.
He's like, okay, here we go again, and then he'd take a deep breath and become the character.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is the Saul Wurzel unit at 20th Century Fox.
Right.
Saul Wurzel, of course, being the producer, who was a protege, or certainly William Fox really got him started back in the silent days.
Quite so, yeah.
And Saul Wurzel, he's the one about whom the Rich Brothers, when they went to 20th Century Fox and contracted there and ended up being in the Saul Wurzel unit, which was, of course, the B-picture unit, one of the Rich Brothers, I think it was Harry, said, things have gone from bad to Wurzel. And Saul Wurzel knew how to make a B picture. I mean, the production value,
and it's got that, and the picture has that has that Fox gloss.
It does.
If you don't know what you're watching, if you come to it cold, and don't make the connection that these faces seldom appeared in top of the line,
right?
Productions, you'd think it was a top of the line picture because that's the way Fox made its B's.
That's right, and they had the standing sets, didn't hurt anything, but they have that atmospheric opening in there. It's
so beautiful. Anyone who likes the Charlie Chan or Michael Shane pictures from Fox will automatically be drawn to Whispering Ghosts on grounds of production values alone.
That's right. That's exactly right. And there's some other stuff in there. There's actually some pretty creepy things where Carradine talks about hearing the slave singing on the ghost ship. That's a nice little segment of it. It's not really a horror story, but it certainly has those elements, and it certainly looks. I mean, that would be the top of the line Republic, let's say. I mean, it would be a Republic A picture, whatever they call those. I remember they had their little names for them. I can't remember what that one was, but it it would have been an absolute A picture for Republic, and it just beautiful. You see the opening of this picture, and you think this is going to be a great picture. It's not a great picture. It's too complicated.
It's a Milton Berle picture. What do you expect? I don't mean to be be such a naysayer about Milton Berle, but if it weren't for his supporting cast, there wouldn't be much of a story there.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Oh, and goodness sakes, speaking of supporting cast, don't forget Jimmy the Raven, or sometimes known as Jimmy the Crow.
Jim Crow, yeah. Uh-huh.
Nice trained bird featured performance. Same bird that appeared in Bill and Coo as the Black Menace.
And an Enchanted Forest.
Enchanted, yeah. Enchanted, yeah. Yes.
With Harry Davenport, the PRC picture, the when PRC decided they could do a Walt Disney picture.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that Enchanted? Isn't that the name of Enchanted Forest? I think it is.
I believe you're thinking of the Enchanted. There were so many Enchanted this. That, I think it was the Enchanted Valley.
Well, I know that it was cut down.
It was both of them.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was just looking through the index to that corresponding volume of Forgotten Horrors.
Okay.
Unabashed plug there. And yes, it's the same, not really a series, but they were connected.
Right. Well,
Enchanted Forest, Enchanted Valley, and the semi-sequel further, Miraculous Journey.
Oh, see, I didn't know about that one. Now, see, the first time I saw Jim the Crow was, it was in called Tale of the Redwoods, which was the official 15-minute condensation of Enchanted Forest.
Yeah, well, and if you want to put a really fine point on it, Jimmy the Crow appeared in a number of Jungle Jim pictures.
There you go. Jimmy the Crow's got quite a resume, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
nice. Yeah, Jimmy the Crow was. There's some great character players in this. It's got a lot of atmosphere. It's interesting that they figured that Burl, you know, when something comes along and works well, like Bob Hope's persona in, you know, mystery slant horror pictures, maybe they were trying to find other people who could do these. For instance, when Dick Powell was put into Murder, My Sweet, and a former big band singer and a former vocalist, anyway, then, of course, William Marshall, Republic came along with William Marshall and made him Dan Turner, and mm-hmm. because he was a singer as well, and made him a hard-boiled act, and put him in blackmail, some sort of deal.
So, yeah, the best of that, I guess you could call it a subgenre if you tried real hard.
Right.
The spooky comedy that works theoretically would work on both levels, and I think this one does. Tend to work on both levels.
I agree.
You know, you're looking for the best of its kind. Well, this is not it. Probably you would want to go to one of the Bob Hope pictures at Paramount.
One of the Paulette Goddard pictures that he did.
Yeah, one of the, you know, Ghost Breakers, for example. Mm-hmm. Or certainly to Murder, He Says.
Oh yes, sure.
Which ended up with Fred McMurray, all to the better, but had been conceived and launched into the writing phase of it as another Bob Hope horror comedy.
Oh, I didn't realize that, and Fred McMurray got it instead, huh?
Yeah, that was probably good for all concerned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm sure Hope would have done a lovely job of Murder, He Says. But Fred McMurray is terrific, and that
he is.
If that, for my money, that may be the best of that peculiar strain of scary, creepy, hilarious movies.
And that was just before the Egg and I, or was that just after the Egg and I?
That was, I believe, before. Yeah,
I think that's right, and that's where Marjorie Main established that character. Am I
getting
all that? Yeah, I think it is for the Egg and I.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's, or, I mean, or for Mom, Pa, Kettle. Which one was it? I'm trying to think now. Which
actually, that was, that all ties together.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That all does, together.
It's because unified field theory we've just found.
Yeah, the Kettle family pictures wouldn't exist without the Egg and I. Ma Kettle wouldn't exist without the psychotic, creepy old farmer woman in Murder, He Says.
Oh, there you go. Very
and,
good. Yeah.
And you, to think that Marjorie Main had had been known heretofore for playing sophisticated drawing room types.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, found as you like to say, she found a greater prominence playing Ma Kettle. It's a little hard to find this picture, but you know, it's, I think it's worth running it down. It's interesting to a lot of people who just know Milton Berle from the Uncle Milty stuff and his later years as really a TV star, but mostly as a vaudevillian. I mean, is how people know him, I guess, as got as a, you know, working in the vaudeville tradition, which was of course where all that TV stuff came out of anyway, and the, and you know, cross dressing and all that sort of thing. But he was he's okay in this. He's it's an interesting picture. Again, and I'm not one, don't want to whack on Milton Berle either. He may have been a wonderful man who loved his mother and gave to the synagogue, but he was not very likable.
No, and of course his broad overplaying, which became a trademark.
Yes,
sometimes it works. Sometimes it's like, okay, pull it back. George Turner said, used to say that whenever Berle appeared in the picture, it might have not been the best acting, but it certainly was the most acting.
What was New York, New York, Scorsese? What was the famous famous line where Liza's up there and he's directing her? He says, okay, Liza, give me less. It's the same sort of deal. Although I have to say, in this particular picture, Milton Berle is more just of a wisecracker than he is, you know, chewing any scenery or anything. That he kind of leaves that to John Carradine, who does an admirable job of scenery chewing in this, I think.
Yeah, well, Carradine knew how to chew the scenery.
Oh, did he ever? Yeah. Loved the guy. Just absolutely loved him.
He would chew it so hard that you'd want to taste it yourself.
Exactly.
It's like, boy, that looks tasty. Huh?
Exactly. But that's what we're talking about, folks, a Fox film from 1942. And we should mention the director was a journeyman, really. You know, he did a number of different things. Alfred Werker, we're talking about. And I guess, oddly enough, he was known as much as anything as he was known for the films that became known as film noir. I mean, he did, you know, what, repeat performance and Walk East on Beacon, and he walked by night, Shock.
Certainly he
Lynn
walked
Barry.
By night.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about without which there wouldn't be. You know,
True.
He walked by night is one of the definitive film noirs, Shock, mm-hmm. with Vincent
mm-hmm.
Price.
Lynn Barry does a great job.
But he also did westerns and some of the later Laurel, one of the later Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah,
comedies.
Haunting We Will Go, I think.
Haunting We Will Go, yeah. Which came the same year as Whispering Ghost. And of course, my favorite Werker picture is The Reluctant Dragon.
Of course, with Disney. Yeah.
The Disney piece, which is just so much rumpus in the press, making up phony crises today about gay characters in mm-hmm. Disney films. Go back and look at The Reluctant Dragon. It's, and it's a brilliant piece of work.
Right, right. Well, of course, he did the first Sherlock Holmes, didn't he? Didn't he do that first? I mean, the first Rathbone Sherlock
Fox,
Holmes.
The Fox Sherlock Holmes, which
yeah.
established the franchise that later ended up at Universal.
At Universal, exactly. Yeah. So he was around. He got plenty of work. He was like Carradine. I mean, he was a good, reliable journeyman, and he even did like stuff like my Pal Wolf. You know, he did all. He just did anything. You're right. He did just about any genre he was able to do, and this is a nice, entertaining movie, and I just love Brenda Joyce in it. And of course, you wonder why she didn't quite hit that ceiling between between A pictures and B pictures for her, like it was for a lot of other people, like Lynn Barry we just talked about with Shock. You know,
she might not have tried as hard in the A type pictures. It's like you can tell she's really pouring herself into this role and kind of lending ballast.
Yes.
Lending a little bit of leavening. Mm-hmm. I'm flabbergasted at how this picture actually does hold together. And of course, as we said earlier, it's, I think, the glue provided by a really great supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the only bad spooky comedy mystery is none at all.
That's exactly right. And on that note, let me ask you what you've got out that you'd like to plug now that we'd like for the folks, if you enjoy the podcasts, and people seem to be enjoying these podcasts, we'd like to direct you to this is kind of like, you know, it just struck me, Michael, this is sort of like the midway, you know. People come mm-hmm. in and they see, and then we have the blow-off attraction there for extra money at the end. But if you would like to read some of our material, we would like for you to. And we've got a lot of it, Michael more than I actually, but there's a lot of a Forgotten Horrors franchise stuff to choose from on Amazon.com and other places as well.
Yeah.
At this particular time, I've just gotten back from the Oklahoma Alliance of Fans Convention, OFCON, in Norman, Oklahoma, and we more or less debuted our book, Fantasies in the Sand, that you and I wrote.
Great.
There. And it's a book about beach party movies, but we trace them back way back, in fact, to the Wild Women pictures of the 1930s. And we've gotten our first review on our Amazon site. It's a wonderful review from a guy named Ice Pick Sir Critic. And he said, this is a dangerous book because every time you open it up, you lose, or every time I open it up, I lose 2 hours of my life. And he says it's that absorbing. So that's very cool, you know, to have that happen. But it's called Fantasies in the Sand. It's more along the lines, I would say, probably of our Forgotten Horrors to the Nth Degree, because there's a lot of interviews in it. We talk to a lot of people between the two of us, you and I, Michael. We talk to Frankie and Annette and Bobby Vinton and Samuel Arkoff and even Bill Boyd, Bill Boyd's brother, Jim Boyd, the Western Swing personality, and he actually leads off the book. Now, going from Western Swing to beach party movies is, if you want to know how that happens, well, please check out the book. It's on Amazon.com, and you've got some new stuff out on Amazon, right?
We just shipped the third volume of Roadkill, Texas Horror by Texas Writers.
Nice.
And
are you editing that as well as writing it, or
just contributing? It's kind of a secondary concern, but they were nice enough to make the invitation.
Sure.
And there you go. Mm-hmm. So I've been involved with that since the beginning a couple of years ago. And this is it's like kind of interesting. It dovetails with my own comics anthology, Deep in the Horrors of Texas.
Yes.
but yeah, that and of course, meanwhile, getting out the word on Fantasies in the Sand, which mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like everything we've done together from scratch, you and I. Seems to end up being right there amongst my favorite projects.
Well, it sure is fun. I really enjoyed working on that. And, of course, that's a cliche, but it happens to be true. And we're just getting some really nice feedback from it. And people are buying it, and we're just very happy about it. And we'd like for you to check it out if you're interested in. Well, if you're interested in this sort of thing that we're doing, you'll be interested in the Forgotten Horrors books. I think it's pretty safe to say, and all of the ancillary things from Michael H. Price's cottage industry down there in Fort Worth, Texas. Anything else, Michael? We might think about what we're going to talk about next time around. I'd like to Anatomy of a Psycho, if that would work for you.
Well, yeah.
We've got. You know, I just watched, as you say, a fresh viewing, and it's a pretty interesting little picture, and I'd like to sort of chew on that a little bit next time around.
I think that's wonderful.
Okay, sounds great. We'll be talking to you soon, and we want to thank everybody for listening. We've just passed, what, about like 25,000 in downloads or something? What is it, Joey, 20,000?
Around
20,000? I mean, and thank every one of you.
Absolutely.
And if you've downloaded it more than once, thank you multiple times. And, you know, if there's only 100 people out there that are downloading it 20,000 times, well, that's great, too.
Yeah.
However it's working out, we do want to say honestly thank you. We appreciate you listening. And as long as you keep listening, we'll keep on doing them, I think, at least for the foreseeable future. So there we have it. And that is the Forgotten Horrors Podcast. And we have been talking about Whispering Ghosts with Milton Berle and Brenda Joyce and Willie Best. And we'll be back later. Talk to you later, Michael.
Won't be long.